This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel. Today's question is, can I analyze the case of James Flanders and Marie Carlson? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. James Ty Flanders was born on May 19, 1968, in the state of Arizona, and eventually lived in Florida. He married a woman named Tanya. James worked as the pastor of the Calvary Emerald Coast Church in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. This is about an hour east of Pensacola. Marie Jane Carlson was born on October 7, 1974, in the Philippines. She later moved to Florida. Marie earned a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and worked as a deputy sheriff in Colorado. At some point, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. This appears to have negatively influenced her ability to work. Marie eventually married a man named Jeff Carlson. They had a daughter named Paris. Marie and Jeff divorced, and their daughter lived with Jeff in Kentucky. In 2008, Marie moved to Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and worked in a coffee shop. She became a member of the same church where James Flanders was the pastor. On July 14, 2011, Marie gave birth to a daughter named Grace, but the circumstances surrounding her pregnancy were somewhat mysterious. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On October 17, 2011, 37-year-old Marie Carlson went missing. 2 days later, on October 19, at 4:38 p.m., a group text was sent from Marie's phone to several people that she knew. The text read, quote, "Yesterday, I left Fort Walton Beach. There is something that I have been wanting to do for a very long time, and there will be no better time than now to do it. I didn't tell any of you what I have been planning or that I was about to leave, because you probably would have tried to talk me out of it. I appreciate and love all of you." Unquote. The writing style of the message was not consistent with Marie's style. Her friends and family members found it peculiar that she left both Paris and Grace behind, as well as all of her belongings. On October 24, Marie's ex-husband Jeff reported her missing. The police spoke to James Flanders and his wife, Tanya. The couple said that Marie moved into their house in Fort Walton Beach in October of 2009. In the summer of 2010, Marie moved to Arizona and lived with the parents of James Flanders. The couple claimed that Marie agreed to be a surrogate. James and Tanya already had a child, but they wanted more. They were not successful in this endeavor, so Marie was going to help them out. The couple traveled to Arizona, where Marie was, and Tanya watched as James had sex with Marie. Tanya didn't really seem to be too worried about the sex. She implied that sex did not make a relationship. Rather, quote, "sex is just a bonus," unquote. Marie became pregnant and moved back to Florida in the spring of 2011. She once again lived in the same house as James and Tanya. It was Marie's intention all along to allow the couple to have her daughter, Grace. Again, this is according to James and Tanya.
As far as what happened to Marie, here is what James Flanders told the police. On October 17, he was with Marie at the house. Marie became upset with James, so he decided to go for a run at about 7 p.m. When he returned, between 8 and 8:30 p.m., Marie was missing, along with her Mazda pickup truck. She had packed bags, but did not take them with her. James said that he and his wife looked for Marie all around the area. They found her pickup truck in the long-term parking lot of the Northwest Florida Regional Airport, which is now called the Destin-Fort Walton Beach Airport. The truck had been dropped off on October 18. The police discovered that Marie did not take a flight out of that airport, rent a vehicle, or board a bus. The police spoke to members of the church where James was the pastor in order to get a better understanding of the relationship between James, Tanya, and Marie. The church members delivered a few different stories, which they had heard. For example, one story suggested that Marie became pregnant by a boyfriend who had mistreated her, although there was no evidence this mystery boyfriend actually existed. Another story was that Marie was artificially inseminated as part of an arrangement with James and Tanya. One church member claimed to overhear Tanya saying that a turkey baster was used in this process. It seemed as though James and Tanya were not being honest with the church members about what happened, like they were making up various stories to explain the peculiar situation with Marie. As the investigation progressed, the police discovered that Marie thought of herself as the wife of James. In her Bible, she wrote the name Marie Flanders. This was more than just a surrogate situation. They were in a polygamous relationship. The police determined that the cell phone owned by James was near the airport when Marie's pickup truck was left there. Marie's cell phone never left the Fort Walton Beach area, and it had been in the house of James and Tanya when the group text message was sent on October 19, 2011. James appeared to be struggling to cope with everything that was happening. On October 31, he checked into a mental health facility after asking a friend to get him out of the country. James was there for 10 days.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule. History so interesting, it's criminal.
At the end of January 2012, James and Tanya took Grace and moved to Tucson, Arizona. They departed in the middle of the night, even though they had originally planned to leave in the morning. Investigators were preparing to visit the couple to ask them more questions. The couple was aware of this impending visit. The police were fairly confident that James had murdered Marie, but without a body, they did not feel confident in making an arrest. Later, an anonymous tip came into the police, indicating that Marie's body was in the backyard of the house where James and Tanya used to live. On May 18, 2012, the police visited the house and made an extensive search of the backyard using equipment like ground-penetrating radar. They determined that no one had been buried in the backyard. They were absolutely positive that Marie was not there. The investigation came to a standstill. No progress was made on the case for a few years. Eventually, advances in computer technology brought the case back to life. The police had access to Marie's computer, but their initial analysis did not give them access to her messages. New technology, however, did give them access. The messages revealed that Marie had been in a sexually charged relationship with James. For example, one message that James sent to her read, quote, "Seeing you at church tonight, I can't kiss your lips, drives me insane," unquote. On May 14, 2015, James Flanders was arrested in Tucson, Arizona, and charged with second-degree murder. The state offered James a plea bargain. In April of 2016, James pleaded guilty to manslaughter in exchange for telling the truth about the murder and revealing the location of Marie's body. Here is the story that James supplied to the state. James considered Marie to be a second wife, although they never had a ceremony or anything. On October 17, 2011, James was worried about Marie because she appeared to be depressed. He told her that she needed to go to a mental health facility, but she was not happy about this idea and erupted in anger. The two had a physical altercation during which James placed Marie in a bear hug. They both fell to the floor and slammed into it hard. James realized that Marie was not breathing. Instead of calling for help or doing anything to assist her, James decided to take a different approach. He went to the shed in his backyard, retrieved the shovel, dug a 5-foot hole in the ground, and buried Marie's body. The state had offered a killer a plea deal to get information they already had. The backyard had been searched, and investigators declared Marie's body was not there. After James supplied the story, the police returned to the backyard and found her body. James put on a little show in the backyard by kneeling and crying on the ground, probably in an effort to make everyone who was watching him physically ill. James told the authorities that his wife, Tanya, was completely innocent. She didn't know anything about the murder. In July 2016, James was sentenced to the maximum penalty for manslaughter, 15 years in prison. Under his plea bargain, he could have been sentenced anywhere from 11 to 15 years, but a downward departure was also a possibility. This is something that James was hoping for. He wanted a sentence that was less than 11 years. I find it interesting that a pastor, someone who undoubtedly talked about heaven and hell, would be so eager to get a downward departure. He didn't get it at his sentencing, but perhaps he can still get it later. James said, quote, "I never imagined it was within me to fail and fall the way I did in every way at the time of Marie's death, and in the days and weeks that followed. It would take an act of God for me to forgive James Flanders. My entire life has been a horrible lie," unquote. James Flanders will be eligible for release in 2028 at the age of 60. His wife has custody of Marie's daughter, Grace. Tanya was never charged with any crime. Now moving to my analysis. Not everybody was satisfied with the plea deal that was offered to James Flanders. They argued that the state had a strong enough case to convict him of second-degree murder, and there really wasn't any good reason to offer him a plea deal other than to recover Marie's body. The police should have already recovered her body because they searched the backyard where she was buried years before James confessed. This brings me to the question, did the state have a strong case against James prior to his confession? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that James was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. James was in a sexual relationship with Marie. It appeared as though James and Tanya lied to church members about the real nature of that relationship. Marie went missing under mysterious circumstances. Marie's cell phone never left the area. She never accessed her financial accounts, and she never departed the United States. James did not report Marie missing. His cell phone was near the airport when Marie's truck was left in the parking lot. Marie's cell phone was in his house when the group text message was sent. James told people that he had been involved in a physical altercation with Marie. He asked a friend to get him out of the country on a boat or on a plane. James did not explain why he wanted to leave the country, but he did say, quote, "It's so bad, it's so bad, it's so bad, I just can't tell you," unquote. James and his wife, Tanya, ended up with Marie's daughter, Grace. Right before investigators were going to talk to James and Tanya again, the couple mysteriously departed for Arizona in the middle of the night. Moving to the exculpatory factors, Marie's body was never found. Just about anything could have happened to her. Maybe she started a new life. She could have brought harm to herself. Marie had bipolar disorder. Perhaps she was having a manic episode. She had a history of disappearing for several days at a time. There was no physical evidence of a homicide. No crime scene could be identified. Someone else could have killed Marie. If she was willing to have a sexual relationship with James, she clearly had very low standards for selecting romantic partners. Maybe another undesirable partner killed her. When considering the evidence against James, did the state have a strong case, or was the plea deal a good idea? In my opinion, the state should have taken this case to trial. James was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, even prior to his confession. If the state had simply done a better job searching the backyard of his house, they would have found Marie's body, and a conviction would have been all but guaranteed. Moving to the last question, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Marie Carlson suffered from bipolar disorder. During manic episodes, she would make poor decisions. James Flanders was highly attracted to Marie. He suggested the idea of Marie becoming his wife. Marie was happy with this plan. After Marie became pregnant, which was probably not intentional, James scrambled to explain his predicament to the church members. He came up with a variety of stories to conceal the true nature of his behavior. On October 17, 2011, James murdered Marie, probably in the heat of the moment. Maybe she threatened to expose him to the church members. Perhaps she threatened to take her daughter away. There's no way to know what really happened. I think James strangled her with his bare hands, as opposed to his homicidal bear hug story. He once gave a sermon where he talked about how he wanted to choke people who were spreading gossip about him. After making this statement, he offered a creepy smile to the audience. It's not clear what this statement had to do with promoting spiritual beliefs. Maybe this was part of his unpopular Choke Your Way to Heaven series. Ultimately, James Flanders was simply a killer and a hypocrite. He preached to others about rules they should follow, but believed those rules did not apply to him. James tried to be a cool and charismatic pastor, but he was really a cold and manipulative killer. The state offered the plea deal to James for a few reasons, including because he was articulate. The prosecutor suggested that James would have been a formidable adversary in court. James was able to escape a life sentence because he buried his true nature behind a friendly and outgoing disposition and buried the body of his victim so deep in the ground, the police could not find her. His emotional expressions told the story of a man who wanted to be caught, but people failed to dig deep enough to uncover the truth.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Hi, this is Amy and Vanessa from She Goes By Jane, where we shine light on the stories of missing and unidentified women. On November 7th, we're sharing Nahida's story for the first time in a podcast. And this is a story that I thought I knew, but after reading police reports, became more complicated than I thought. When investigators are called to Nahida Khatib's house, everything looks fine. Her purse is on the kitchen table, her cup of coffee is on the counter, and her two-year-old niece is in her playpen. The only thing amiss? Nahida is missing.
Every week, we feature a poem written in honor of the person we're talking about. This week, we're joined by one of our favorite actresses. You might know her from Sister Act or King of the Hill or The Descendants. But if you're like us, you'll know her from Hocus Pocus. She's the much-beloved Kathy Najimy. Join us November 7th to hear Nahida's story.